This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
So we're on tiny stuff, Dalet Amud Aleph. And the piece of Gemara that we're doing appears in the Medrash in a slightly different form. And I'm going to read the Medrash first, and then do the Gemara, and then we'll tackle it from there. The Medrash comes in Chaya Sorah around the issue of Eliezer making his deal with God over Rivka, and it's quite important because do these deals work, and how effective are they, and can we use them? In order to determine things. So what does Eliezer say? He says that I'm standing by the well, and the first woman that comes down, or a woman that comes down, I'll ask her to give me water. If she gives water to me and to the animals as well, I know that's the one. An interesting approach to Shidduchim. Imagine what would happen today if somebody told you that that's what they did. Imagine if Beis Yaakov advised their girls, or the yeshivas advised the boys, you know, all you do is go to Beis Yaakov's place, and first girl you see, ask her for a glass of water, and if she says, and what about your puppy, because he needs water too, that's the girl for you. It would be a little absurd. But that's what Eliezer did. And the Gemara, the Medrash says, there are four people who made a demand on Hashem that was improper. In three cases, God responded properly, appropriately, and in the fourth case, he did not. And these are they. Eliezer Eved Avram, Eliezer, Kalev said he'll give his daughter to the man who conquers Kiryat Sefer. Shaul said he'll give his daughter to the man who kills Goliath. And Yiftach, who said he'll bring a sacrifice of the first being that comes out of his yard. Eliezer said that whoever says, here, go ahead and drink. Ho'ilu yotso amo achas v'ishkoso yo masio v'ben adrema. If some servant girl had come out and offered water to him, would he have married her off to the son of his master, to Yitzchok Itamar? It's amazing. And Hashem answered him well. They hardly finished speaking, and Rivka came out. Caliph says, whoever conquers Kiryat Sefer, the Masati lo is achso biti l'isho. If some slave, if some servant came and conquered the city, would he have given him his daughter? And Hashem answered him well. Kalev's own nephew is the winner. Kalev's nephew, Othniel ben Kenaz, of all people, conquers. The man who kills Goliath will get great wealth and the king's daughter. If an African American or an Akum, that's what they're called nowadays. They're not African Americans. I'm African American. A Cushy means a black person. Imagine if sometime in those days, where did it? What? Black person was descended from Ham, probably. He wasn't the highest of societies, or Akum Echod, or some other form of idol worshipper, or Eved, or a slave. The Kor, and they managed to beat Goliath again. Recently, he's beaten with giving his daughter the Zimelakish with a Kohen. And who does he get? He gets David. Yiftach never. He says, "Vayashi yetsi mitlote midalte beiti likrosi b'shuvi b'sholem." Whoever comes out of my home to greet me as I come back in peace, "Vayola Hashem v'ilisu," I'll bring it as a sacrifice. "Vayilu yotzu chamer kelev echod chatul echod yom alei yom." What if a donkey would have come out, or a dog, or a cat? Would he have brought it as a sacrifice? What is in his head? Zimun HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shulot Tehegen, and Hashem didn't answer him appropriately, and as he came back, he made bitter Yotis Yekos, so his own daughter came out to greet him. What did he do with his daughter when his daughter came out to greet him?
Did he put her
into the Kherim? Did
what?
He tore his garments. Then what did he do with the daughter?
He sent her away.
He sacrificed the daughter.
Sacrifice. Different stories. We've got different. We all know the beginning of the story, but the different. We have different endings. Which is the true ending? Imagine that he sent her away. You were saying. What is it? Let's try and find out what actually happened. So that's the Medrash. Four, three got answered well, the fourth one did not. Let's look at the Gemara now. Says the Gemara, is dealing with asking the way to ask for rain and the tefillah for Geshem and so on. Omar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, this is about a quarter of the way down the page, said Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. In the name of Rabbi Yehonasan. Shloisha sholu shaloi kahigin. Lishnaim vishivu kahigin. Leechot vishivu shaloi kahigin. Three people asked inappropriately. Two got answered well. One did not. The Elohein, and these are the Eliezer Eved Avron. The Shol ben Kish. The Yiftach HaGiladi. Okay, what is the question so far? Why did they leave Kolev out? That's Tosfos' question. Why is the Gemara left Kolev out? You see how when you know the other material, Tosfos' questions become obvious. Only if we don't know the Medrash, then we don't know that there's a question here. But if we know the Medrash, that Kolev is included elsewhere, why is Kolev left out here? Eliezer Eved Avron Dichtiv Yohanara Asher Omer Aleha Tino Kadech Yochol Afilu Figeres Afilu Suma. Could be even a lame woman could have come, or a blind woman. So what did the Medrash say? What were we worried? What could have happened in the case of Eliezer? It could have been an amo achas. Could have been a lowly maid servant who could have come out. In our Gemara, what is it? What are we worried about? Blind or lame? Well, who cares if she's blind or lame? As long as she's a tzaddikus, what's the difference? Why is the Gemara concerned with whether she's blind or lame? Is a blind or lame woman not entitled to a good shidduch if she's a tzaddikus? This is it. And the Gemara is criticizing it. How could you make such an undertaking when you hadn't seen the physical appearance of the woman? What do we see from there? The appearance matters. The physical appearance is very important. It's important. We'll see a little bit further. Heshiva kohogin v'niz dam lo Rivka. Who comes? The most beautiful, gorgeous, wonderful woman who's a tzaddikus as well. Rivka. He was lucky. But the question was wrong. He phrased it incorrectly. He's criticized for the phrase. He said he's fortunate that Hashem answered it. Shol, the Chtiv Ayoish Hashiachemu Yashinu Hamelech Oishah Godol Vizbitu Yitin Loi, Yochol Afilu Eved Afilu Mamzer. He could have been an Eved or a Mamzer. What did the Medrash say he could have been?
An Akum or Kush.
Could have been a Kushi or an Akum. Heshiva Kahogin V'nizdamen Loi David. Yiftach HaGiladi, Dichtivah Yitzah, Sheyetzah, B'dolah Tzavedi, Yochal Afilu Dova Tomei, could have been a treif animal, same as the Medrash, could have been a cat, a dog, donkey. Yeshiva Shaloi Kahigin, his dam lo lebitzer. And his daughter came out. Firstly, before we even go further in that, it's true that they all asked inappropriately. But the fact is, three of them were answered appropriately. Even though they asked inappropriately. Why? What was the difference between the three and Yiftach? So they're asking on behalf of somebody else in all cases. So who are the somebody else's, Alan?
So, well, Rivka is
for Yitzchak.
Then he's looking for the shidduch for his daughter.
Right.
And
Shaul is for.
Also the shidduch for his daughter.
So his daughter, yeah.
Yitzchak wants his own glory.
Yitzchak's not doing anything for anybody but himself.
He's bringing a sack, he's bringing a korban.
So the,
and we're missing with shul, we've got kollel, we've got okay, we can take that idea a step further, I think, David. What did you want to say?
It occurred to me just this evening, I've seen this issue a number of times, there were the three that worked out. Had it, in the terms of the Midrash or the Gemara, not worked out, it would have been a judgment call or an opinion whether or not it would be good to do it. In the case of Yitzhak, if something inappropriate came out, it was usher to do it. It was no longer, this was not a judgment call. This was, it could be
in the case of Yiftach.
In the case of Yiftach.
It's clear that this was not allowed. Yeah. Let's just go back to what you were saying. And I think you can go further in saying that in the other cases they're doing something else. I'm not sure what you're going to say.
Yiftach doesn't benefit anybody.
And the others? Who benefits from the others?
Somebody benefits.
Who?
Mm-hmm.
So that, I think that's what you're saying, Alan. Is that right? But I think you can take it a step further. The others are for Klal Yisrael. Who benefits if Yitzchak gets a good shidduch? That's our mother. That's all of us benefits if Yitzchak gets a good shidduch. Who benefits if Goliath gets killed? Klal Yisrael gets saved.
Right, but that doesn't... The fact that Goliath gets killed doesn't matter who kills him.
True, but he's doing it. But he's doing it for who's the beneficiary of the act is Klal Yisrael. Right, it doesn't matter who it is, but the beneficiary of the act is. So he's asking for a miracle so that Klal Yisrael gets a great mother. He's asking for a miracle that Klal Yisrael gets rid of Shaul, of Goliath. He's asking for a miracle that they conquer Kiryat Sefer. What does Klal Yisrael get from Yiftach? Nothing.
What does Yiftach do with the prayer? What's the whole reason? What is the whole thing of Yiftach? What's the reason he does this?
He's come back. So also he wants the war. He wants to win the war. So he's bargaining with Hashem. If I win the war, whatever comes out of my year, I'll give to Hashem. So it's not the means of winning the war. It's the outcome of winning the war. Outcome is that's very different from the other three. The other three are saying that. The one who actually does it, they're looking for strategy, not for outcome. They're saying, I'm looking for the person who's going to be able to do this, and I will reward that person for what they did for Klal Yisrael. But in the case of Yiftach, he's not rewarding anybody for what they did. He's rewarding Hashem, and then playing games with who walks out of the gate. We'll see a little bit further that why that's a problem. So the first thing is that to ask for Siyata Dishmaya for the Tzibur, is much more acceptable than asking for Siyata Dishmaya for ourselves. We don't really have a right to Siyata Dishmaya. Who's in debt to who at any moment? Does God owe us or do we owe God? At any given moment, we owe Hashem. So what are we asking for Siyata Dishmaya? What is our demand? But if we're asking for Klal Yisrael, then it's different. Then Hashem owes Klal Yisrael, and we can call in the debt, so to say.
The war is also...
Yes, but he's giving it as a prize kind of at the end. He's fighting the war. He's not giving it as an incentive to the person who wins it. He's giving it as an incentive to Hashem.
I understand, but the beneficiary at the end is still Christ.
Yes, but they've already benefited. In other words, before he brings the sacrifice, they've benefited. He's not using the test as part of a strategy to benefit Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael has already benefited. He's not involving the whole test process is part of that strategy. So how do we do that? Does that mean we can never ask for Siyata Dishmaya? Can we never say to Hashem, please have a parking spot for me outside the building, I need to go, I'm late for my meeting?
Yeah.
Can we not? And therefore we shouldn't ask it, or we may?
No, I think it's better to ask it, because if you ask Hashem, he's wanting to do a testing for us.
But we're merely asking for it. You're right, but we would enhance our chances much more if we link our own destiny to that of Klal Yisrael. Which means if we as individuals are in some way doing things that benefit Klal Yisrael, and certainly if we can see that we do that in everything that we do, which is the ideal, that there's Kiddush Hashem in everything that we do, then we can make certain demands and we can have certain expectations of Hashem. If we're acting for ego, Hashem has no reason to support us. Well, yeah, for ego, do it yourself. If you're working for me, I'll help you. I'm your bala boss. We've got to figure out during our day, are we working for the boss or are we working for ourselves? If we're self-employed, be an entrepreneur and find your own way. If you're working for the boss, ask the boss for whatever resources you need. And we need to mold our lives and shape our lives and direct our lives in a way that ensures that our lives are dedicated to working for Hashem, not for working for ourselves. Then we can bring also say, here's us working for Hashem. And Shaul is working for Hashem, and Khaled is working for Hashem. If that there's a bit of personal glory involved, and we'll see the proof of that in the next piece. The Gemara goes on to say, and this is what the Novi said to Klal Yisrael. Which Novi was this? This was Yirmiyahu. Hatsori ein begilad im roife ein sham. The pshat of that pasuk is there not medicine in Gilad? Is there no physician there? Meaning, the way it's normally taken to mean is, why did Bnei Israel not turn to the Nevi'im of the time and to the Talmidei Chachamim of the time? Were there no people there that could have healed them of their avodas, of their sins, and brought them to tshuva? But the way the Gemara is learning it is about Gilad specifically, which immediately we think of Gilad. Who do we think of? Yiftach. Yiftach HaGiladi. So you think of Gilad, you think of Yiftach. So what is Hashem saying? In Gilad were there no doctors? In Gilad was there no medicine? And tomorrow we're going to explain that. And there is another pasuk that says, "Asher lo tzivisi v'lo dibarti v'lo also alibi." This is the pasuk that appears in Yirmiyahu, where Yirmiyahu says they established mizbechos to bring their children as sacrifices to the Baal. Something I've never instructed, I've never said to people, and it's never entered my mind, says Hashem, that there should be child sacrifices. Asher lo tzivisi zeh b'noi shel Mishol Melech Moav. That I never instructed, this was talking about Mishol Melech Moav, Mishol the king of Moav, Shinema, Vayikach es b'noi abechara, Shigim lech tachlo v'yalo yo'ilo. That Mishol took his firstborn when he got into trouble and he saw the war wasn't going his way. He took his firstborn and brought him as a sacrifice, and Hashem gets angry with him. Hashem said, oh, that's something I've never been okay with. V'lo dibarti ze yiftach. And I never wanted it, I never instructed it, that was Yiftach. V'lo also alibi ze Yitzchok ben Avrom. And even with Yitzchok, it was never my intention that Avrom should sacrifice Yitzchok. Not that I changed my mind, it was never my intention that Avrom should sacrifice Yitzchok. That's the Gemara.
Is it still all the quotes from Yirmiyahu?
Sorry?
Is that all the quotes from Yirmiyahu, or is that why speaking there?
Which part?
Where does Yirmiyahu end?
Vayikach es b'noi ha-b'chora shirim l'chtach v'yaloi o'ilo. Stop. V'lo dibalti refers back to the earlier pasuk. Asher lo tziviti, v'lo dibalti v'lo also alibi. So the Asher lo tziviti, v'lo dibalti v'lo also alibi, then the Gemara goes on and says, Asher lo tziviti is talking about Misha. Got it? So it's two different psukim that the Gemara is taking to pieces. So let's go through this and see what was all this about. Let's look at the Rashi. Haksori ein begilad. Is there no medication in Gilad? Says Rashi, Pinchas hayosham. Pinchas lived in Gilad at that time. V'hoyo yochul lahatzir nidro, and he could have been matir neder for Yiftach. Yiftach should have gone to Pinchas and said, "I have a problem. I made a neder and I'm in trouble. My daughter walked out first. Help me. Give me a hatoros medorim." So why didn't he? Ela shaloi rotzo yiftach leilech etzle. He didn't want to go to Pinchas. V'hu loi rotzo lover yiftach. And Pinchas didn't want to come to Yiftach. That's from the Medrash Rabbah, says Rashi. What's the Medrash Rabbah? Let's learn. It's the same Medrash that we had before. The Medrash continues. Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish have an argument. Rabbi Yochanan Amar. Omar Hekdesh Domim Hoyochayev. Rabbi Yochanan says that what Yiftach intended when he made that undertaking was not that I will sacrifice whatever comes out, clearly that couldn't have been his intention, but that I will dedicate the value of whatever comes out of the Beis HaMikdash. Matish Domin. And therefore he has the obligation stands. Doesn't matter. He knew it could have been something treif, but he was going to give its value. And Reish Lakish says he's not even chayev for money. He's not chayev to do anything. The oath is null and void. To undertake, to make an oath, to bring as a sacrifice something you cannot bring as a sacrifice, isn't an oath. It's man omar al behim otzmei ovar balas mum hare ilo ilo lo yamaklum, because there's a clear Gemara. If you say, in a Mishnah, if you say on the treif animals, you say, this donkey will be a korban oila. It's nothing. No, it's a nonsense. Say my motor car will be a korban oila. Nothing, you don't have to worry about it. It's nothing. It's meaningless. It's absurd. Omar hare eilu oila yimkiru v'yobi b'dameihem oila. So he said, but then at least he should sell it and bring in the value as money. Why not? The law, Yosham Pinchas Yotun is Nidra. And apart from anything, was Pinchas not there to be matter the Neden? And Pinchas Omar, but Pinchas said, who tzorich liva ani elef hetzlah? He needs me. What am I going to go to him? I'm the Talmud Chacham here. I'm the Rav. I'm the Rosh Hashiva. And if the Balabos needs me, let him come. I don't have to go running after him. It's not the COVID of a Talmud Chacham. Yiftach Omar, Ani Rosh Ktsina Yisrael, Ani Olech Etzel Pinchas. And Yiftach says, I'm the commander in chief. Am I going to go to Pinchas? What happens in the United States if the president has to consult with the chief justice? He goes to who? Chief Justice goes to the president. So that's what Yiftach argues. I don't have to go to him. Ben din ledin ovdo hanarahi. Then the Midrash says something very telling. Between the two of them, the girl was lost. That's all it says.
Are they taking Pinchas to
task at the Shabbos? Yes. Who are the Amri? This is what people mean when they say, Ben Chaisol and Chablisol, Ozu Broda Alusto. Between the midwife and the mother, the child of the poor girl dies. The midwife's arguing about whether to cook, whether to go, and the mother's wondering whether to call the midwife, and nobody gets there, and there's a death. And they were both punished with the blood of the girl, Pinchas and Yiftach. So the girl dies, that's for sure. The question is how she dies. Yiftach meis ben shila sevorin. Yiftach died a terrible death. His limbs kind of fell off as he went around. He died limb by limb. Bekol makom shoyalev po yoev nisha, wherever he went, he lost a bit of his body. Well, you curve him, Yisrael, they buried it there and then. Ador dichtiv, ayomis Yiftach, because it says in Tanakh, and Yiftach died, vayikaber ba'arei Gilad. And it says he was buried in the cities of Gilad. How can he be buried in cities? Be'ir Gilad le'nemar, or ba'arei Gilad. So clearly his body was scattered, his remains were scattered. Terrible death. Pinchas nitlo menenu ruach HaKadosh. Pinchas lost his ruach HaKadosh as a punishment. So yes, the two were taken to task. The girl died because both stood by their pride for halachic reasons that were erroneous. Under these circumstances, either of them could have compromised their status and have gone. Pinchas could have done so because it was for his own good. There was no degradation of his office by doing so. It was just for his personal needs. If the president needs a physician, does he go to the hospital? Do they bring the hospital to him?
He has it in the way.
same dentist, and he lived a while, and the because he was a Eliyahu Hanavi also, and Eliyahu also should have gone. That's it. It was just to save somebody else. He should have done so, but they didn't. One thing is clear: the girl died. Not clear whether Yiftach killed her or she committed suicide. That's what's not clear from the Midrash.
It's one of those two.
What else could it be? Because of the Naro. The girl was lost.
That doesn't mean she died, necessarily.
What does it mean?
The point was she wailed her virginity and she said goodbye to her friends. Maybe she went off to live as a hermit somewhere.
And then it says they were punished for the blood of the girl. I know it's not the way it's taught at the Jewish schools. In the Jewish schools, it's taught that she was locked away somewhere, whatever it is. But that's not what the Midrash says. The Medrash says that of the Hanara, I also had always heard that something had happened to her, and there's a very fascinating woman in Toronto who gives Tanakh shiurim, and she's very, very knowledgeable. She knows an awful lot. She's a Brandeis graduate, so she's not stifled with any preconceptions of tradition. That's both an advantage and a disadvantage. She's just got the text. She knows Medrash, she knows Chazal very well, and she gave a shiur that my daughter was there, and my daughter said she felt with all these different views as to what actually happened, and in Beis Yaakov she only heard the one side of the story, but there's a whole lot more.
There's a Jewish feminist book called Jeff's Story.
And what do they say there? Let us just see the pasuk inside. Yud Aleph? Okay, let me get it right. The Rambag says something interesting. Yeah, correct. The Rambag says what he meant was if what would come out of my house would be a human being, I will give it to Hashem, meaning that's what you were saying. That was his intention. I'll dedicate him to the service of God or her. And so on. If it's a man, it's a woman, the same as with Shmuel. That's what his intention was. The Ramban at the end of Vayikra says that's crazy. He brings the Rambag, he brings in the name of the Ibn Ezra. We don't have an Ibn Ezra like that, but we have the Rambag. And he proves that there's no way. The Ramban says that was in Yiftach's mind. So you see, there's quite a lot of controversy about it. Even in Chazal, as to what exactly was in Yiftach's mind and what actually happened. And he says the following, this is the Lashon of the Rambam, Va'al tiye nifta behevle Rabbi Elezer. Do not be seduced by the nonsense of the Ibn Ezra. This is the way he writes. And as I said, it's not the Ibn Ezra, if we don't, unless it's a text of the Ibn Ezra that we don't have, but it is the Ralbag. Ha'oim ki perish ve'ili tu, oilo ve'ili tu, aloima imi ye, ayetz v'nada beti isho isho, ye la shem kodesh, ye polish bedarche oilom, and so on, and he quotes the Ralbag. He says that's completely absurd. It's very different from what the mother of Shmuel said when he was born, and she made it very clear that that's what she was going to do, was going to give him to serve Hashem, and the idea of making him a hermit or her, that's completely contrary to anything in Torah. He should serve Hashem, not be separated, not be some kind of hermit that is isolated from humanity. That's not our idea of holiness. Our idea of holiness is engagement and involvement. So that wouldn't be what he intended at all, and that's not the way we would interpret it. And so he goes on to a different interpretation. So we've got different views as to what happened, and Hashem says, it was never my intention. On the contrary, I would have wanted Yiftach to get HaToras Nedorim, and the fact that he didn't is what he was punished for. He wasn't even punished for it. Yes, he asked Shaloi Kehoigin, but they all asked Shaloi Kehoigin. What does the Medrash say is Yiftach's punishment for? For not going to Pinchas. And what was the reason he didn't go to Pinchas? His own ego, which brought me back to saying that was one of the differences. The other three weren't asking for ego, they were asking for Klal Yisrael. They weren't asking for self. In the case of Yiftach, there was a touch of ego involved. I've come home from the battle victorious, and I'll make a whole ceremony, and I'll give the first thing that comes as a public sacrifice to Hashem. There was ego. Ego is like chometz on Pesach. a little bit of it does a lot of damage, and it castles the whole thing. One little speck of chometz, one little speck of yeast, we always talk of yeast as the ego, as the Yetzirah. One little speck of ego in a ton of matzah dough makes the whole lot chometz.
So being a sophist does not mean that you're a very wise man necessarily. He was a sophist, doesn't he?
Yes.
Does that imply any academic or intellectual greatness as well?
Yes.
It's so stupid to assume.
And why do you think there is a conflict between intellectual greatness and stupidity? Have you not encountered in the annals of history cases of gigantic intellects who are stupid? And when does it happen? What causes the stupidity? And what is that?
Ego.
Ego is what makes an idiot of the giant, of an idiot of the brilliant, of the. It makes a mockery. It makes a fool of all of us. It's the surest indicator of pending failure. We use it in business. We've done a study of the correlation between corporate failure and chief executive ego, and it's completely correlated, and it's an absolute predictor of corporations never succeed a long time after the chief executive demonstrates ego and arrogance, unless they change the chief executive in the process.
I think this is related. Is the Yiftach example the only one where there's randomness? The others are?
Yes. So there's another example. And the others, there is Midas. Right. At least he's checking Midas. It's performance-based. Right. At least they check. To offer water to all those camels, it's a lot for a young girl to offer water to a whole lot of camels. It's a fortune of labor. To be willing, that shows absence of ego. The beating of Shaul, of Goliath. Goliath is not going to be beaten with strength. There is no one stronger than Goliath. There is no one mightier than Goliath. So that's not going to be what's going to do it. Nor is it going to be brilliance of strategy. At the end, it's got to be somebody who recognizes their own smallness. What does David do? David says, there's no way I can beat Goliath other than the Siyata Dishmaya and getting his weak point. That's all I can. I can't take him on. He's bigger than me. So it requires a recognition that this is bigger than me, but still I can do something. That's achieving without ego. And the same with Otniel ben Kenaz. To beat Kiryat Sefer, it's going to have to be with Chochman. We actually see in Tosfos, we're going to take that idea just one step further when we look at why this Gemara doesn't bring Chalid in at all as one of the examples. What did you want to argue? Okay. So says Tosfos, Shloisha Sha'olu Shaloi Kahodin, the third Tosfos, Eliezer Sha'olu V'Yiftach. The Intomar asks Tosfos, Amai Loi Choshiv Kolev Ben Yifuna, Sha'omar Ashi Akeh Kivya Sefer Lechodo, Anosati Lois Achso Biti V'Isho, Amai Lo Porif Kamoi Hacha, Yocho Mamzer or Eved. A Mamzer or Eved could have conquered Kivya Sefer, and then what would he have done? Given his daughter to the Mamzer or the Eved? There's an interesting chazal on that story, that it wasn't about the conquest of the city. Kiryat Sefer, what does it mean? What is that? What is the name? What is the word? The city of the book. And what had happened was that there were a lot of halachas that were forgotten in the time of Moshe. And Kolev says, if somebody can, using his own wisdom, can recover those lost halachas, can conquer Kiryat Sefer, that's what it really means. I'll give him my daughter. So he's looking for the sign of Tochem. It wasn't a military victory, he's looking for the sign of Tochem. The Yesh Mefarshim, the Lekach Nikres Achso, she kol harei, and some say the reason she was called Achso is she kol harei oso koi salishto, Chazal say. Anybody who saw Achso used to get angry at their own wives. Because they saw amazing tzniyus in her. So however tzniyus the other people were, she was even more tzniyus. And he was sure that she was such a tzaddikus that nobody would, that Hashem wouldn't bring a person not worthy of such tzaddikus to his daughter. So he felt relaxed. So he gives, this person's giving two answers. The one is, this was about, he was looking for a Rosh Hashiva, he wasn't looking for an army general. And the second is, he knew even if he was looking for an army general, it would be somebody worthy of Achsa. And that's why this Gemara doesn't bring in Kolev. Because Kolev was not Shaloi Kavegim. This Gemara holds that Kolev was not Shaloi Kavegim. What about Eliezer? Didn't he rely on the tzidkus of Yitzchak? Why is that different? And did Shaul not know? Shaul's daughter maybe wasn't on the same level of tzidkus as Yitzchak, but certainly Yitzchak should have been.
And Eliezer was asking for chesed.
And Eliezer was asking for chesed. So it's like looking for the Rosh Hashiva in Midas. He was looking for the Rosh Hashiva. He was looking for the Mashgiach, for a Baal Musar, a Bailas Musar he was looking for. For Yitzchak, and surely he was sure that Yitzchak would also be, it would be Bizchuso. And I don't know, one of the answers might be that Tzmius has a special role when it comes to Siyata Dishmaya for Shidduchim. Because in the case of Tzmius, what does Tzmius do? It actually is it lowers your chances. Tzmius is actually counterintuitive. If you're on the Shidduch market, then Kol Kvod Bas Melech Pnimo, the tendency is to go out and to be a little more aggressive. The idea of Kol Kvod Bas Melech Pnimo is that a woman's greatest honor and dignity is internal, makes it harder for her. And for that, the special bracha. So Kolev realized that his daughter was so exceptional in tzniyus that there's no way that the Rebbe Hashem was going to trip her up on a matter of shidduchim.
That's what.
His daughter. Yeah, he's asking for his daughter, and his nephew is the one who wins. Let's look at the next Tosfos. Yochel afilu figeres asumo. Tema asks Tosfos. Maybe Eliezer would find a lame person or a blind person. Amayle nakonach gabi Eliezer. Eved Avrom kamele koma gabi shol besomak. Yochel afilu mamzeres or shivcho. Why are we worried about her physical beauty? Why not worry about her yichus? The same as we are by shol. Omer Rashi mishul digabi Eliezer lo shayach hadayin mamzeres to haloi nisno tzeru. Rashi says because the Torah wasn't given yet. There weren't halachas of mamzeres. So that wasn't the problem at that time. And another answer is that when it comes to a woman, beauty is the most important. And that doesn't mean that midas and everything else isn't important, but the carelessness would be to bring, everything else you could say is not so much an act of carelessness. If you would come back to Yitzchak and he would say, here's the woman I found using this magical test that I did, and Yitzchak says, yeah, but you know, Yitzchak is not that. Or, well, you can't blame Eliezer. What do? You tried your best. You found somebody who wasn't 100% appropriate. But you bring back somebody lame. Or you bring back somebody who's blind. What's Yitzchak going to say? I send you to give me a shidduch. Didn't you have eyes? Didn't you see? What are you bringing back? Why this? And therefore, so what we're talking about is not every possibility. Yes, it's possible it would be an Eved or a Shifcho. It's possible it would be a Mamzeres. There are all sorts of possibilities. But where's the carelessness? The carelessness is to obligate yourself to somebody you haven't even seen. You're looking for a Shidduch, to not even see the person. That's careless. The same as with the case of Shoal. There's a different kind of carelessness. Asks Tosfos, is another interesting question. What did Eliezer do wrong? What does he say? He's very clever. He says, when the woman comes, I will say to her, give me some water. And if she then says, not only you, but your camels, I'll do that.
So you pick the woman
here. Yeah, very simple. He says, if he sees that he's a figurist, he won't invite her. He won't include her in the race. So what did Eliezer do wrong? If the worry was yichus, then I understand. There's a problem. But if the worry is beauty, he'll have a look at her and then he'll make a decision. She could have had plastic surgery. And he wouldn't know. How do you know what's authentic and what isn't? So to her, to him, he could look very beautiful, but he takes her home, and they discover that it's an artificial limb. She's missing a leg, she's got an artificial limb, or anything else that's artificial. So one could say, well, so what? As long as she looks good. Well, any other takes a look at her and says, she's a beautiful girl. Isn't that good enough? Who cares if it's artificial or not? And part of Yofi is genuineness, something that we don't really appreciate in Los Angeles. But part of beauty is authenticity. One would rather have the real thing that shows the signs of wear than something that's fake. What beauty is there in fake? When a gemologist is looking at a gem to check whether to check its quality, what happens when he sees a flaw? What does he do? Does he say, "Oh my goodness, there's a flaw," or does he say, "Baruch Hashem, there's a flaw"? That means it's genuine. Genuineness is a function of flaw. Perfection is only with a Ribono Shel Olam and artificiality. There's nothing in between that is perfect. The only things that are perfect are things that are artificial and the Ribono Shel Olam. Everything else, the charm of everything else lies in its flaw, because in the flaw is the vulnerability. And vulnerability is what creates attractiveness. If we're real human beings, if we're artificial human beings, then we're attracted to the artificial. If we're artificial people, we're attracted to the perfect. If we're real people, we're attracted to vulnerability, because we have a role to play when we're vulnerable. We have a role to play. That's important. I remember our attender once telling me that he loves clockwork watches and clocks, because they need him. He's got to wind them up. Electronic watches and clocks, they need him. They don't even need you. They function without you doing a thing. They don't even need you. A real human being is attracted by vulnerability, because vulnerability creates intimacy. There's a need. If somebody is vulnerable, then there's a need for protection. If somebody does not show vulnerability, there's not a need for protection. If somebody is vulnerable, there's a need for valuing. If somebody is perfect, they don't need anybody to value. If a woman is perfect, she doesn't need a man, because everybody admires her as it is. If she's not perfect, she needs a husband who sees her as perfect despite her vulnerabilities, and vice versa. So when Eliezer takes a look at Rivka, it doesn't help that she has the external appearance of perfection. It's not perfection that he's after. He's after realness, authenticity, and you can't tell authenticity that easily, says Tosfos. And therefore, there was carelessness in Eliezer's request that he might bring home somebody who wasn't authentic, somebody who was artificially beautiful, and that wouldn't have been good for Yitzchak. So these are some of the asides that come into this delightful piece of Gemara. There's also the question of Hashem saying, it was never my intention that Avraham should bring Yitzchak as a sacrifice. And that, we don't have time to go into that in great depth at the moment, but just to raise the questions, the difficulties, the challenges of the Akedah. If it was never Hashem's intention, because it's completely contrary to everything that Hashem is, didn't Avraham know that? Didn't Avraham? Or what would have been so wrong had Avraham said, "Not, I don't want to"? That might have been a problem. Because the Sultan comes along and says, "Would Avraham do anything for you?" How do you know that Avraham would do anything for you? Hashem tests him. Fine, understand that. But what would have been so bad that Avraham said, "My initial error, if you really want me to bring Yitzchak, I'll bring Yitzchak. I'll do whatever you want. But hey, just explain. This doesn't make much sense to me." What are we supposed to learn from the Akedah? Just mindless obedience? That even if Hashem tells us something that doesn't make any sense at all? So for example, when Hashem said to Moshe, "Go and wipe out the Midianites," what does Moshe do? Does he get up and go and wipe out the Midianites? What does he do? Doesn't question? Well, they're not told of the question. What does Moshe do next? He sends Pinchas to wipe out the Midianites. Why, says Chazal? Hashem told you to do it. Why are you delegating?
Did it happen in the desert?
Yeah, the Midianites protected him. Yisrael was from Midian. So Moshe realizes Hashem cannot possibly mean you do it, because of Hakoros Hatzorim. Hashem wouldn't ask me to deny my Hakoros Hatzorim to the Midianites. That it has to be done, that there's no question. But that I need to be the one to do it, that can't be. How does Moshe know that? That Hashem couldn't mean it literally. Because he learns it, says the Chaim Shmuel Levitz, he learns it from the Makkos. What happened when it came to the Makkos of Kilim and Dam? Says Ter Aaron, Hashem says, you can't do it because you owe something. So Moshe Kal Bachomer, if I owe something to inanimate objects that protected me, don't I owe something to human beings that protect me? So if Hashem wouldn't let me do those Makkos, the Makkos had to be done, but not by me. Then clearly, when it comes to the Midianites, also the Makkos have to be done, but not by me. Couldn't Avraham have done the same? And said, Hashem can't possibly mean this. There must be there'll be an aisle there, or like the Rambag wants to say with Yiftach, he means I must be Makdishim, or I must dedicate him, like Shmuel, to Hashem's service. He must mean something else. He can't possibly mean that. Because Hashem makes it very clear, it's completely contrary to everything that I am, to require of a person child sacrifices. Is the question. I don't have an answer for it yet. What are we being taught there? Are we being taught blind faith? In which case, not blind faith, mindless obedience. Blind faith is one thing. Mindless obedience is something else. Obedience, yes. But does it have to be mindless obedience? At least question. Even if you're going to follow it through, just question. Just ask a question. Observe. Notice. There's the beautiful medrash on which Tashlif is best. And the Medrash says that as Avraham was walking, remember the Medrash, the Sultan appears to Avraham first as a fire, and then as a river and a flood, and tries to stop him going. So he walks through the fire and he realizes it's an illusion in his head, it's not real. And then he walks through the water and he realizes it's a mirage in his head, it's not real. And then the Sultan comes and says, you know what, it's okay, go, because you're not going to have to sacrifice your son. Hashem has already prepared a ram there. So he now spoils the event. And Avraham answers and says, you fooled me twice already, I can't trust you this time. So what does the Medrash say? Clearly Avraham in his mind is going through the possibilities. Is it possible that... And he's saying to himself, almost as if, yes, maybe there's an aisle there, but I've got to do it believing that there isn't an aisle there. And as I say, it's still the most troubling piece of Tanakh, is the Akedah. What are we really meant to learn from that? What did Avraham learn from that? This woman who teaches in Toronto makes an interesting point. So I've asked her to try and find proof in Chazal for it, but it's a very interesting point. She says, what was the outcome of the Akedah? What do we see? What happened in Avraham's life as a result, after the Akedah? She says, he lost his wife. He's never reported talking to Yitzchak again. And he's never reported talking to Hashem again. Now, it could be just the Torah doesn't report every event. The Torah doesn't report every time Hashem speaks to somebody. It doesn't report every time the father talks to you. So it could be that it wasn't relevant after that. That the episode of Avraham comes to finality at the end. And that could be the reason. But she makes the point, maybe Hashem would have been happier had he questioned. Damn it, yes, he has to do it. There's no question he's going to do it. But at least question. And he lands up losing. She says, if there's validity in the fact that these three cases are not, that these three, there's no mention of these three interactions, communication with son, with wife, or with God, then he lost the three most important and intimate relationships in his life, with Hashem, with his wife, and with his son. If there's any kind of validity, but one would need to find some proof in Chazal for that, some indication in Chazal. As far as I'm aware, we don't see Avraham criticized anywhere in Chazal for not questioning. But the interesting thing is Sorah did die, and it's strange that there would have been such a negative outcome from something so pure. If it was, the thing that gives credence to her viewpoint is if it was really 100% pure, why would a negative outcome come? Why would Sorah die from that? Die a week later. Is the thing that is troubling. So the event is troubling, and it touches on this Gemara, but we don't have the chance to go into it much deeper.